It's time to take a listen to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you by Island Design every Saturday morning from 10 till 12. Last Saturday I caught up with filmmaker Sharon Brown, opinionated islanders Alan Knight and Alex Stone, and Lynn Stewart from the Waiheke Community Cinema. But first, Daughter Ray from the Waiheke Waste Resource Trust with Talking Rubbish. You're on Island Life here on Waiheke Radio, and it's quite exciting because we're welcoming back now the return of a feature which used to be run in the past, back in the old days before Waiheke Radio when we had The Beach. We're a regular feature of that station was a show called Talking Rubbish. And back then, Denise Roach, before she was councillor, was an educator for the Waiheke Waste Resource Trust, and she used to come in regularly and talk about issues of waste minimisation and so on. And in all of the recent kerfuffle around CleanStream and TPI and the changeover in our waste management practices, perhaps people have forgotten that the origins of the Waste Resource Trust were primarily around education and raising awareness of waste minimisation. And that is, I suppose, the focus that the Trust is now turning back to. And with me is the, you better tell me again, daughter, it's the Social Enterprise Intern, is that right?
Social Enterprise Intern.
Oh, that sounds nasty. I wonder what's going on there. Social Enterprise Intern Daughter Ray for the Waiheke Waste Resource Trust here for Talking Rubbish. Welcome along.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about, I mean, that's a grand title, but what in fact does that mean? What do you do?
Okay, so my title, my position at CleanStream is one funded by the Tyndall Foundation, who do a lot of philanthropic work around social enterprise, and John thought it would be a really interesting project to see whether doing an internship in a community organisation was a good way of producing a social entrepreneur, and I was lucky enough to be the one that got the position. So I'm here for 2 years learning about community organising. And I can't think of a better place to be doing it.
Excellent. Now, you've got, as I was saying, we've got this focus now on I suppose, educating the public about how they can minimise waste. And what are your aims around that? I mean, what are you hoping that, or the Trust hoping that they will be able to achieve in that area?
Well, we hope to continue with the education that Waiheke has taken up and really run with over the last 8 years in terms of how they recycle. We don't want that to change, and we're going to look at new ways that we can kind of expand into. The Trust and CleanStream are doing some strategizing on where they'll be going, and I think we'll probably hear from them soon as which direction we'll be heading. But waste, and probably a little bit wider than waste, into sustainability issues in general.
Good stuff. Now, you've got a couple of projects which are really aimed at focusing attention on these whole issues. So what have you got planned over coming months?
Okay, well, we've got E-Day coming up on the 12th of September, which is a free drop-off of computer waste and printers and things associated with computers. And also Junk Defunct, which has had a year off in 2008, but is back. And better than ever in 2009.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about E-Day. So computers and printers, are there a lot of those lying around? I mean, they're pretty expensive items.
They are, and there are heaps of them lying around. I think one thing about the design these days is that something new comes out and we throw the old thing away, which is not a great thing, but we're dealing with it with this project called E-Day, which is a nationally run day. I am the Waiheke coordinator, so this is going to be an event that's running throughout the country, and it is really a place where you can drop off your e-waste and know that it's going to be recycled, because currently on Waiheke, you can take it down to the transfer station and it will go into landfill, which is just terrible for the environment in so many ways.
But what's so nasty about a computer?
A computer contains all sorts of different components. It's made up of lots of metals. It's made up of lots of plastic. So there's two angles to what's wrong with throwing computer waste away. One is that it's bad for the environment, in that the stuff contained in those computers is bad when it leaches into the soil. For instance, lead is really, really bad for humans, and it's also bad for the environment in general. And there's also a lot of really precious metals and other plastics and things that we could be reusing in a computer, so it makes absolutely no sense to be chucking it into landfill.
And I suppose there's also the reuse aspect, isn't there? I mean, sometimes people underestimate the extent to which old computers can be, you know, vamped up a little bit and still be perfectly serviceable.
That's right. And there's several places on the island that I know if you want to drop off your waste, you don't have to take it to the transfer station. You can take it to them, and they'll do their best to use the parts that they can.
So where can people do that?
I think the free... What do they call themselves? They've just been in the Gulf News the last couple of weeks. I can't remember what their name is. And also the Island Computer Guy. I know that he does some as well.
I know that certainly a lot of the computers we run at the station have got parts which we've scrounged up from old computers, and they seem to do the job.
Well, it would be absolutely wonderful if at some point in the future we could organise to have computers dropped off somewhere on the island, and people on the island taking out what they can and refurbishing computers. It would be so cool if we could do something like that. And other small communities do it. The problem in New Zealand is that we are far away from lots of the manufacturing components and things like that. So,
okay, now the other big project, of course, is Junk Defunct, and people, I think, will be glad to see the return of that. So it had a year off, and now it's back. So what's the result of having that year off and a refocus?
Well, I'm really, really excited to be involved with it again. I've never actually been to a Junk Defunct, so it's been a huge learning experience for me, and I'm just so impressed by how involved the community has been in Junk Defunct in the past. And I think having a year off means that people are a little bit refreshed and have got new ideas, and we've got a great team of people who were involved in the past, but also some fresh faces. The people who have had a year off are still welcome to use their ideas that they had for 2008, and they can now use them for 2009. And I know there's plenty of people out there who have been saving up on ideas for the Junk Defunct when it comes back. So now's your opportunity.
Okay, and when is that? When are both of these things?
Okay, so E-Day is on the 12th of September. It will be run from the Waiheke Freight Yard in Tahi Road, 15 Tahi Road, across the road from the bakery there. It'll be from 9 until 3, and it's a car only, although we'll probably be, you know, we're not going to be too strict on people. Car only event, so can't bring your car in, drive on in, we'll take the computer out and you drive off, basically, is the deal with E-Day.
You would have to hope that people don't have trailer loads of old computers.
Well, that's why we make it a car only day. And we are going to work with the schools who probably will have trailer loads, but we're going to try and work them separately, you know, so we don't hold everyone up. But yeah. Try not to bring trailer loads just because, or call me first, basically, if you're going to do that.
Okay, and the advance notice means that if people are having clear out, they can just set it aside. And if someone really has to get rid of a computer now, before E-Day, is there anything they can do with it in the interim?
Well, yes, they can take it to the transfer station and pay for it to be put to landfill, which I just don't advise. They can take it to those places that do accept them on the island, the computer recyclers that have been mentioned in the Gulf News and the island's computer guy.
Okay.
Probably other guys as well around the place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, and Junk Defunct is?
That's E-Day. The 2nd and 3rd of October.
Right.
And it will be the same deal. It will be 6 to 8.30. We'll try and keep to that short time frame. There's so much out there it's going to be great.
Good stuff. Now, Daughter's going to be back, sometime soon, Talking Rubbish, a regular feature here on Waiheke Radio as well. Welcome on board.
Well, thank you very much. Pleased to be here.
You're on Island Life, brought to you by Island Design, every Saturday morning here on Waiheke Radio. as I said at the start of the show, we've got a lot about film today, and I've got a filmmaker with me now, and Sharon Brown, who's also one of our very own Waiheke Radio announcers. Good morning, Sharon.
Hi, Chris. How's it going?
Good stuff. Now this, where to begin? Let's start off with what's happening today, because we've got a film screening today, don't you?
Yeah, that's right. So the Cinema Trust has kindly allowed us to have a little fundraiser at the cinema. So they're screening Ice Age Dawn of the Dinosaurs. It's Ice Age 3, I think. And it's a rug up, bring a blanket, bring a torch. We're going to have the room's going to be dark, so kids have to find their way using their torch. We're going to have popcorn, and there's going to be a couple of little films that were shown beforehand. We thought we might show a little bit of Junk to Funk, maybe a little bit of The King and I, playing as kids come in. So there are going to be people around from about, 1:30, 1:45.
Yeah, my boy is really, really looking forward to Ice Age. He's been talking about it for weeks and weeks and weeks. He's very, very excited. So this is, this is a nice idea, because often the fundraisers that go on, people, the cinema are pretty good at putting on movies as fundraisers, but often they're aimed at adults, so it's nice to have something aimed at children.
Well, that was our intention, because I think, this is part of a trust called FAMDA that we've just started, and the idea is to encourage participation by women in the arts and to create opportunities for women to tell stories. And all of us have children, and we also want to do events that include children as part of who we are, and also, just to do fun events around them as well.
So now I'm glad you announced the name of the trust, because I'm firmly a monolinguist, unfortunately. So tell us again the name of the trust and a little bit more about, what its kind of premise is.
Okay, well, the name of the trust is FAMDA, and it's a little bit tongue-in-cheek. So it's like Women in the Arts. And to be honest, using a French name is terribly, terribly pretentious. So we're kind of taking the piss a little bit out of, that whole pretension and trying to bring it down to a lower level and saying that people can participate. But I'm not sure that it's necessarily working, because I think people are maybe a little bit intimidated just by the name. So so it might potentially be backfiring on us. But, it's all in fun, and it's, also, there are other organisations out there that do things around women. There's Women in Film and Television, but it's perhaps a little bit more highbrow. And what we're trying to do is to encourage people to participate at a more fundamental level.
Okay, so you've got a few projects on the go, because, this idea of women participating in the arts. What kind of things do you have lined up?
Well, the thing that we're raising the money for at the moment is to make a short film, and the film is about a woman's journey to get her kids to school and herself to work on time. So what we're aiming for with the trust is stories which foreground women's experiences, not necessarily the really, the painful experiences or, I think often organisations around women are about highlighting quite horrible things that can happen around abuse or coming to terms with difficult issues. And I think this is just saying that, women have a perspective, and that isn't always seen, because, if you look at the statistics on participation in film, for example, in the, I think I've got from 2003 to 2007, there were 24 feature films directed in New Zealand. Only two of those were directed by women. And it's the same in terms of the writing of stories. So one in four stories is written by women. And yet they're, 50% of the population. So it's just to try and get a kind of more of a female perspective into things. So that's our film project.
Yeah, and I suppose it's a nice idea that one of the things which often inhibits women from participating in the arts is the fact that they're looking after the kids, so a nice little twist having the film about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the other thing that we're really keen to point out is that the reason women can't participate is that they're often involved in the childcare, so it's difficult for them to find the time or the money or the additional money required for them to be able to participate. So that's why we're saying, some things you can bring your kids along to, and then other things, maybe we need to recognise that there is a cost of childcare, and so we need to be raising funds to cover that kind of tedious aspect of participation so that they can then go and be involved in other ways.
Okay. Okay, and you have other projects lined up as well?
Well, the other big fundraiser is Women, Music and Dance. So it's a celebration of you know, female talent on the island. But it's open to everyone. It's a cash bar. It's on the 22nd of August. And we're just hoping that lots of people will come down and have a dance and, you know, see some of the performers. The early part of the evening is going to be performance-based. And then the second part is going to be a big dance party. So although it's women performers, it's open to everyone. And I have to say that about the Trust. It's not, you know, sometimes people think that something that's pro-women is anti-men. It's not like that at all. It's just, you know, let's just get out there and have a good time.
So how do people get involved with the projects and with the Trust?
Well, you can email femmes.d'art, so it's F-E-M-M-E-S .d.arts @gmail.com. Also, we were supposed to have coverage in the papers this week, so maybe things will come out next week. And, yeah, there's an email list, so if you email us, we can also email you. Mm.
In fact, people could probably contact the station and we could forward stuff on.
Oh, that would be terrific. That would be really, really good. Yeah, and of course, you know, I've got a blog on the station, so I think you can probably reach me through that. And then the other thing that I'm quite keen to mention, and I haven't really set anything up for it, but in October there's an anti-trafficking day. It's the launch of the anti-traffic and chocolate campaign. So basically, in other parts of the world, especially the Netherlands and England, they've persuaded Cadbury's not to deal in slavery chocolate. Because apparently in places like the Ivory Coast, if you talk to a small child who's picking cocoa beans, something like over 90% actually don't have family living within 50 k's of where they are, which suggests that they're all there as in some sort of... you know, against their will, basically. And so what we'd really like to do is maybe organise something around the anti-slavery issue and raise the profile of fair trade chocolate. Okay. In October.
Oh, good stuff. Because I mean, yeah, a lot of women's events for some reason do centre around chocolate, don't they?
Yeah, well, chocolate is very yummy.
Yeah.
I guess the other thing I wanted to say about the film. Can I talk about the film? Yeah, so the film's been made on Waiheke, and we're going to need lots of kids' extras. So preschool kids and also kids in the sort of 5 to 8 year range who want to be extras in a film. Now, that can sound like it's a lot of fun, and it will be a lot of fun. But it's also, you know, there are tedious moments as well around a film set. But, yeah, so we're looking for kids who would like to do that and maybe some parents who'd like to decorate the set as childcare workers.
And do they need to have, you know, bob haircuts and shiny white teeth?
Yes, and they all need to stand around robotically as well. No. They can be all shapes and sizes, and it doesn't matter. And it's a come-as-you-are dresser film set. So that would just be lovely. And what I'd really like to do is to make a Waiheke movie. So the more involvement we can get, the better it is, really. And it's going to cost us about $8,000 to make this movie. So that's why we're starting to approach businesses to see if they'd like to be involved, starting to approach people to see if they'd like a credit in the film. And then, yeah, maybe the credit list is going to be huge, but everyone will feel they've had some involvement.
Good stuff. So we might have a whole lot of children walking around carrying bottles of Stony Ridge wine angled towards the camera.
That'd be a hoot.
It's Sharon Brown and Femme d'Art. I took the plunge and tried another language. And now that movie this afternoon is at 2 o'clock at Waiheke Cinema, and it's $12 for adults and $6 for children. Is
that's
that right?
Right? Yeah,
great. And a fundraiser for the Trust and that Trust project of the movie. Do you have a working title for the movie?
Oh God, it keeps changing. At the moment, it's wavering between Time and Motion and Plan B. But yeah, and if anyone wants to see the script, I'm happy to send it out.
Good stuff. And as I said, you can contact Sharon through the station. You can contact us by email, studio@waihikiradio.org.nz would probably be the best way, and then we can forward that on. Thank you very much, Sharon.
Thanks very much.
Good luck for this afternoon. because it's the first Saturday of the month, I think, in fact, it is the 1st of August. So we are joined in the studio by the Opinionated Islanders, and this month we have Alan Knight and Alex Stone. Good evening. Good day to both of you.
Good day to you, Chris.
Good morning, yeah.
Yes, great start by me there. So, okay, so now we'll get you to just move a little bit closer there, Alex.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, good stuff. Yeah, as I say, well, it's nice to have you both here. And no shortage of things to talk about and to share your opinions
lots
on.
Lots of contentious issues, yes.
This week. And so now we had an interesting story in the Gulf News, didn't we, about the city scene and accusations that the city scene is showing bias towards the coverage of who they put in the thing.
Yeah. Well, yes, and apparently its credibility has been undermined. What credibility it ever had, I don't know what that was all about. What amazed me with the whole story is that somebody actually opened a copy of it and read it.
And the fact that some people are miffed that their picture didn't appear in City Scene, you know, that's tragic.
Yeah, I used to occasionally read the thing because on the back it had a list of events and, you know, free events and so on, but I must say, yeah, I haven't looked in it lately.
I just throw it away with all the other stuff that piles up in the letterbox. It's just an annoying publication full of council people going, look what we're doing to waste all the money we extorted out of you in your rates bills.
Well, I haven't seen one for months and months and months, or maybe a year. I think we've got the no junk sign on our letterbox, and maybe someone has decided that this is junk so they don't deliver it to us. It suits me fine.
It's one of those things that I used to be able to recycle.
Yes.
We've got two puppies in the house, so all the newspaper we can use to soak up puppy pee is fine. But I don't think it's quite newspaperish enough.
No, it's not very good for lighting the fire either.
No. Mm-hmm. No, it burns with a rather strange
orange
to it.
Orange, yes. Flame, yeah.
You can't help but feel you're polluting.
Yeah,
that's
Aaron Battinger.
Yeah.
He said it's something to do with the green flames.
But the city scene's always been a propaganda thing, and you know, to imagine it otherwise would be crazy. That's just what it is. So let's say, maybe the story gets the comedy prize of the year.
It could well do. There was some statement, wasn't there, that apparently they only show people who head the committees, and because that's all citizens and ratepayers, that's why it's only citizens and ratepayers.
Yeah.
But, you know, it has to be said, who cares?
Who cares? It is one of the dullest publications. I mean, considering, you know, all the other stuff you could get in your letterbox, like what the week's specials at Woolworths, for example, I find way more interesting. Oh, look, you know, steaks on cheap or
whatever. I like looking at the lingerie and the Easy Buy catalogue. That's far more interesting. Mind you, I stopped looking at the Easy Buy catalogue because I started having models with their plumped up lips when they, you know. And I've started boycotting the Easy Buy catalogue, and I've long since boycotted City Scene, so there you go.
Yes, it was a boring read anyway, and I think if you don't get your picture in it, it's not that big a deal.
Look, I can offer to take pictures of these people and put them, where would we put their pictures? You know where we could put their pictures? You know, down by the, at the ferry terminal, there's the sort of check your mate column. They're those pictures of the wanted on Waiheke. Mm, mm. I'd love to get a picture of Brettnanger and stick it up there.
Yes. If you see him, please apprehend. Put him on the boat. Or even better, just chuck him off, let him swim back.
What would we do if we spotted him walking down along the beach? He'd probably be a little bit overweight. No, let's not get personal on that.
I'd put his photo up beside the picture of the possum, you know, not wanted on Waiheke.
Exactly.
There you go.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm.
Right, so what else has been on your mind, gentlemen?
Well, one thing that of course, we've all received, and there's a lot of annoying stuff coming in the mail at the moment, but I was very interested to get this letter from Renee Corner, Manager Environmental Infrastructure, telling us how wonderful all our rubbish and recycling services are now, and asking whether I'd like a bag or a bin. Now, I'm assured in the letter that ratepayers who do not specify a choice will automatically receive a bag service based on the 60-litre official rubbish bag supplied by us. So, Ms. Corner, in the unlikely event that you're listening in, you are a waste of space and a time server, and here's your letter being torn up. I'll just pop that in the envelope, and that should be on your worthless desk on Tuesday morning. Don't bother me with this kind of stuff again.
I'm sure Ms. Corner knows full well of community mood about this. I think she's just been pushed by people above her, and she's doing it, I think, maybe for the future of her career. I don't know, but
We're still trying. They're still trying to sell us the puppy, aren't they? Of like, we listen to you, and we're giving you your choices.
I know, it's absolutely unbelievable. They're wasting all this money putting ads in the paper saying, "Oh yes, we're so concerned about how you feel on this issue." Really? Yeah. Well, you could have fooled us.
There's a 1,000-year right billboards about that. But this 10% threshold is my next intriguing thing, because what is it going to be in the future? If you're a 10%er, one of those that choose a wheelie bin, you're not going to need a tattoo on your forehead or anything, because you'll be outed by the fact that this thing is in front of your
every
driveway.
Morning. Yes, it will sit there like a badge of shame in your driveway. But I chose the wheelie bin option.
But maybe these people should also have something attached to their clothing or something. I'm a 10%er.
Yes, I chose not to support the community on this issue. However, let's say that 10% of people really do pick up on this, and we find ourselves with wheelie bins all over the island. They are, of course, twice the size of our current rubbish allocation. So I think an empty wheelie bin is a sad wheelie bin. So really they should be shoved full of as much rubbish as you can get. Yeah, I've got a driveway full of stuff that I was waiting to get rid of.
Yeah, it could be like a weekly inorganic. You could fill up your neighbor's, concrete is a good option. But I thought the best, how about this for a clever way of decommissioning or derailing a wheelie bin? You get your neighbor parks their wheelie bin out on the lawn in front of your house. What you do overnight is throw a few heavy rocks at the bottom, which you need for drainage, top it up with soil, and put a tree, like a meter-high tree, planted in the wheelie bin.
A native, obviously. So you'd have to get planning permission to remove it.
Yeah, so it'll be quite a symbolic gesture, because the neighbor then would, if the neighbor wants to clear the wheelie bin at that stage, they could be accused of all sorts of terrible things.
That's right, yes. Yeah.
I'm looking at creative ways of using wheelie bins. I mean, we could use an artificial reef. Could use them as coffins.
There's the trolley derby.
Yeah. But my other idea of disabling a wheelie bin is if we went around at night and with hedge clippers and just snapped the axle.
Yes, so bolt cutters, I think.
Yeah. Well, they need some way of doing it. So then the people dragging them, whatever. It could be fun. Could be really
I imagine
fun.
That most of the people who do send in, the 10%ers, as you call them, will be people who don't live on the island. People who have wheelie bins.
Well, that makes it worse, because those wheelie bins will stay out on the streets.
Yes, until people hit them with their cars or whatever.
Yeah.
When you think of the number of places on the island where a wheelie bin is just going to be in the way, the bus is going to come along and knock it into the ditch.
Mm. So especially if someone puts them in the middle of the road.
Yes.
I always thought the take-up would be around about 30%. I don't know where I got that figure from. So do you think we should really work at this naming and shaming, or before we get to that point, reducing the 10% update? If the campaign is to reduce everything below 10, this take up below 10%, imagine if it was 9.5. We'd have 9.5% very unhappy people.
Would they call for a recount?
I don't know. I spoke to his Bratnagar once. I called him up and thought I'd just talk to him as a bit of democratic feedback. Very aggressive man. And he said, "Oh, you community people, you're talking about this, that, and the next thing. I've got people who really want wheelie bins." And I said, "Name one." And he said, "Oh, I've got people who really want wheelie bins." And we got quite heated, but very democratic. I said, "Sir, name one." And he said, "I've got people who've been writing to me who really want wheelie bins." And I said, "Name one," and that's as far as we go.
Now, you said there's a lot of annoying stuff coming through the letterbox, Alan. So you've had your letter from the council, you've had...
And, of course, we've got the referendum.
The referendum.
Oh, God.
Yes. There's a great many things, I think. I mean, I'm a great believer in referendums. I think they're a fantastic idea. This one is rather a silly one, though.
What has it?
Yeah, I've thought a lot about referendum, and, in principle, the idea sounds good, but I think... It sounds good because it's about democracy, but I think fundamentally that those kind of referenda can be completely undemocratic, because it depends if your version of democracy is, the 50% plus one version. I don't know about that, because where's the line in that? So what say someone goes, "Well, let's outlaw homosexuality again," and if 50% of people vote yes to that, that's not democratic.
No. I'm thinking seriously about a spoilt vote. A nationwide campaign. You imagine if 80% of the papers were spoilt, it would send a very clear message that it's a very bad question.
I think that 80% of the papers are going to end up in the fire or not being recycled.
Yeah. So maybe there'll be a very low return. My dad's a philosopher, and he works on some very interesting philosophical arguments about using your time, your limited time on this world, to ask the appropriate questions. He reckons that's what life's about. You've got to ask reasonable questions. It makes life interesting, and you get, you know, decent answers. And there's a lovely expression for a very bad question. It's called a kakvraag. And this is essentially a kakvraag, you know. So why do we waste time with a kakvraag? Because, as my dad says, time is short. Let's ask clever questions. That makes life interesting, worthwhile.
And this question in particular, and I think it's happened with other referenda as well, it seems to take what would be a normal common sense approach to the English language, turn it upside down, inside out, twist it round, and then present it as the question.
Yeah.
There's some faceless person who needs to be named, I think. Apparently the clerk of parliament or some official in parliament, it's his job to, once 300,000 signatures have been reached, then this clerk of parliament or whoever he is has to okay the thing, to ticket to go forward to set the whole national referendum process in place. This person needs a severe talking.
Mm. Yeah. But, I mean, when you think that the whole problem stems from the fact that one of the Green Party's more loopy members pushed for a private member's bill, and to my mind, it looks as if Helen Clark and her brains trust must have sat there and gone, brilliant, let this one go through, because this will damage the Greens' credibility, which it has. You know, I'm sure part of the reason the Greens faltered quite as badly as they did at the last election was that people were genuinely uncomfortable with the whole way that bill was put through. And there's been this move for, with the referendum, of people saying that if you vote no, you're basically saying it's okay to abuse kids, which is nonsense. But the... What people, I think, were more unhappy about, it's nothing to do with whether you beat kids or not. It was the way in which the bill was rammed through is what makes people so uncomfortable. There was this feeling that, oh, no, we know best. And even though there's clearly a lot of people uncomfortable with the way this is being done, nevertheless, we're going to go ahead with it anyway and screw the lot of you.
But wouldn't – I mean, yeah, it's interesting, the ramming through. I mean, wouldn't you say that actually this is probably – and with the passing of that piece of legislation was probably an example of something actually being worked through and a genuinely bipartisan approach been taken, because in the end you did have National, Labour and the Greens voting for it, and quite a change in the wording of it to be something that could all accommodate. So maybe that was the democratic
process.
I'm
not sure the ramming through is the core issue either, because when you hear these proponents of people that want to do the smacking, none of them say, I'm angry because of the way the bill was rammed through. They all say, I'm angry because I want the right to discipline my child in a God-loving way, or whatever they say. But they never bring the ramming through Parliament up. What they bring up is someone telling them not to smack their kids.
Now, the other big parliamentary event this week was the unveiling of parliamentarians' expenses.
Oh, what a disgusting spectacle that was. And yes, anyone who loathes the ACT Party, and I'm sure many people do, must have taken great delight in watching Roger Douglas blow the last of their credibility this week.
Well, Alan, you're talking about credibility a moment ago. Remember, they've only got 1% of the vote. The Greens had, what, 6 or 8 last year? Election, so the Greens have still a damn sight more credibility than the ACT has.
Well, Roger Douglas is a strange character, isn't he? I mean, he seems to have taken this position where his role in Parliament is that he's there and he's going to slowly rub his hands together, go, and spout the stuff that no one, even from his own party, seems to believe in.
Yeah.
He almost fills the role of, you know, in sort of Brothers Grimm type literature, there's always an evil stepmother. And he sort of fills an evil uncle kind of skeleton in the closet, something we would rather forget, that leaves a bit of a bad smell. Or I don't know, he's got some kind of weird hangover from a less kinder and gentler time. You know, there's something about I'd love to sit on a plane next to him just to see what makes him tick.
Yeah, well, maybe if you sat on the plane next to him, you could ask him to buy you drinks, because
yeah, you know, they'd be coming for free. But the only proviso is I'd ask for a parachute as well, because I'd like to bail out at some point, you know. don't know how long I could last next to him. But I'm working on a process of trying to be more informed. So, you know, maybe I should talk to him.
I just think it's rather sad, though, that you know, Rodney Hyde has done such great work over the years as a perk buster, pointing out all these abuses of public money, and then somebody in his own party goes and lets him down that badly. Mind you, it did at least take the heat off Phil Goff, who it turned out was the most expensive one of the lot.
No, it wasn't the Murray McCulley was the most expensive.
Yeah, the foreign affairs people tend to be the most expensive because they have to go in foreign affairs.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's
I'd hate to think what old Winston spent on his
I think it's interesting, this whole thing. I mean, there was the fuss a little while ago.
His duty-free bill.
You know, there was a fuss a while ago about people flying first class. And, you know, I don't have a problem with that. I think if you're the Prime Minister, you're pretty busy. I bet he does a lot of work on the plane. When he gets to London, it's not like he's going, oh, let's go and, you know, go and have a look at the outside of Buckingham Palace. He's probably working really hard when he's there. I don't have a problem with these people flying first class.
Yeah, I've often had the vision of, you know, important people, prime ministers, flying at the back, being stuck next to your squalling baby or someone who overflows. You know, those people that overflow the armchair, the armrest next to you. It doesn't, you know, I think that's torture for us, you know. Yeah, you're right. I think they're welcome to
Yeah, if you're genuinely on political business, then that's fair enough. You can't be expected
but
to.
But here's the thing. Apparently, a number of MPs, well, all of the National Party MPs are flying to the National Party conference in Christchurch this weekend on their plane travel allowance. Now, is that government business or is that party political?
Well, it's
business?
Party business. Yeah,
but they've admitted to flying there on their allowance.
I don't have a problem with that either, actually.
Yeah,
you know, I mean that's we have a party parliamentary system, so you know the parties are fundamental to the running of it.
Yeah, but the conference is not government stuff.
But it will be soon.
Yeah, good point, good point. Now, the other thing is, Alan was worried about was the speed limit on Onitangi Strait. This is
back to local issues. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, the local issues are the burning issues. You know, we must admit that.
They are. I was glad to see that the speed limit has been left as it is. Yeah. As somebody was pointing out last night, it's one of the only places on the island where you can actually get your car up to a bit of speed and clear the engine out a bit, because most cars clog up very quickly. When you're pottering at slow speeds around the rest of the island, that's really polluting.
I'm wondering if the 80 kilometres is fast enough to escape a golf ball, because if I'm playing down that one fairway, my horrendous slice always puts my ball in the middle of the road, so maybe it should be faster so you can, you know, if you see me teeing off, you should be given free rein to go as fast as you like.
I don't know about golf. I still retain my youthful hope and an optimism, so I haven't taken up golf. Once I lose that, obviously it'll be the start of the long trudge out to the golf course for me. But it does seem to me that the people who are going to break the speed limit there are going to do it anyway, regardless of what speed limit you actually set. Put the speed limit at 80, there's people who'll do 90 and 100. Put it down to 50, there's people who'll do 90 or 100.
I mean, you work along there, don't you, Alan?
So, yes.
Is it a dangerous stretch of road? I mean, do you have problems getting in and out of there?
No, not really.
There was a kid about 6 or 8 months ago that got knocked off a motorbike, so it does
get dangerous. And there was the accident a couple of years ago where someone got jailed, didn't they? They were racing along there.
Yeah. That was particularly bad. And that didn't happen on the straight. That was actually on the curve by the turning off to Trig Hill Road that happened. There was a particularly bad one last year sometime when a bunch of kids in a completely unsafe car were going along there at high speed, came off the road and took out a power pole.
Oh, they were on the back of a truck or something, weren't they? I think it was a contractor from town had put them on the back of their truck, and he was out drinking with them or something.
Yeah.
But again, none of those actually relate to the speed limit, do they?
No. People are going to break the speed limit along there, whatever. And particularly, I would really feel for people in Onitangi and beyond who are trying to get to the ferry in the morning, and there's somebody dutifully keeping to the speed limit. It's like, get out of the way, I've got to get to the ferry. It's bad enough on the rest of the island.
There are a number
when you're trying to get to the ferry and the huge truck full of rocks is in your way.
There's got to be a Waiheke code for I'm in a rush to the ferry. You know, in Singapore, commercial vehicles have a little orange flashing light that shows when they're breaking the speed limit. But on Waiheke, maybe if we had some technique of showing, you know, I've got to make this ferry.
There are a number of people who drive around this island at 30 kilometres an hour.
They're called the Waiheke Highway Patrol. There's various people, you know, there's all the great classics, like the Ford Economan full of rusty bicycle parts, and the minibus full of foreign language students who are unaccountably crawling around the island at 6:30 in the morning. And of course the great classic, the truck full of rocks, which is always there whenever there's a ferry about to leave, and it gets in your way and it trundles along incredibly slowly. There is an organizing force behind it, of course. It's a conspiracy.
Is it the guy who sells the coffee down at the wharf? He wants a couple of people to miss every boat, because he must have an hour of really dead time. But if he's got half a dozen people
who've missed the boat, yes, he's got could be involved.
Maybe
yes,
he's the guy with the truck of rocks. I quite like that job, you know, driving around the island with a truck of rocks at 30 k's an hour.
Yeah.
It's like, quite zen-like.
Yes, I've got to go because the ferry is leaving soon and I've got to hold the traffic up. Roll out onto the road with a great big truck full of rocks.
Yeah. I think these are fantastic wee roads. I think we need to slow down as much as we can in this world. So, you know, every so often, slowing down's fine by me.
Yeah, except when you're trying to get to the ferry. Then it's a nuisance. Then it's like, get out of my way.
Yeah. That damn ferry. The definition of a ferry, of course, is that boat that's just leaving as you're sprinting down the wharf.
Yeah. And I mean, they're dealing with that in town. The clock now. The clock.
They're synchronizing the clocks. Mm. I like that, yeah. But they also said they're only going to listen to one clock.
Yeah.
They're trying to synchronize the clocks, but there's only one clock that counts.
The clock. Yeah.
So it's almost like the doomsday clock.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people on Waiheke are like that. I'm not the captain because we'd be gone on the dot.
Yeah. Well, the thing in town is the old antique clock on the clock tower, that's always out. And then there's a sort of 70s clock on a stainless steel pole. That's always out.
Yes.
So the new digital clock is the clock. Yeah.
Yeah, it will be nice to have a clock that you can actually rely on.
Yeah.
Maybe what we need is a referendum on whether the boat should leave on time or not.
That would be a good one.
Yes. But
we'll
have to
really.
Yes, you'll have to get the wording properly convoluted, though.
Yeah, is the ferry leaving as part of good maritime practice on time to be considered a good thing or a moderately not so good thing?
Yeah.
I think that would be a good question.
That would be convoluted enough.
Yeah. I think that's probably clear enough to make it for a referendum.
Yeah.
All right, the Opinionated Islanders, Alan Knight and Alex Stone, leaving us none clearer and somewhat bewildered.
Yeah, I'm confused. Exactly, do we decide anything?
No, but then bewildered and confused is the default setting for Waiheke Islanders, so I think we're all pretty
Well, maybe they'll vote us for the next council or parliament. Who's going to go parliament? Who's going to go council?
I'll run up an expenses bill.
Oh, so it means you get parliament. I get council.
Yeah, 90% of you.
Ah, but come on, if you work for council, you get all those wonderful contracts where people are sort of kind to you. And
yeah, and I'll get my picture in the city scene.
Yes.
Hubba, hubba. This is me.
Right, that's enough for you two. Turning you off. And we've got Lynn Stewart here from the Waiheke Community Cinema, great friends of ours here at Waiheke Radio, to talk to us about a festival coming up, Films About Art, Spring 2009. Welcome along, Lynn.
Thank you. Thanks, Chris.
And so Films About Art. So, tell us a little bit about it.
Okay, thank you. Well, Films About Art is a sort of mini film festival, I guess. And it's five films about New Zealand visual arts.
So they're all New Zealand films?
Yes, they're all New Zealand films.
And all the documentaries, or they, you know, because I mean, you get art films, which I suppose are, you know, arty farty kind of films, but these are actually films about
art on film. Yes, films about artists, basically. Yeah, the first one, which is on this next coming Tuesday the 4th of August, is a film about Ralph Hotory. And he's considered to be New Zealand's greatest living artist, actually. You know his work? He's a painter.
Yeah. When I was at university, there was this great mural in the foyer of one of the university buildings, and it was one of those ones that was Hotory and the words from Hone Tuwhare. It was Rain.
Oh, Rain.
Yeah. And it was such a miserable, horrible building, and I hated all of my lectures in there, but you could stop in the foyer and look at that artwork, and it was just kind of like, that's all right.
Yeah. He's a personal favourite of mine too. Maybe that's why he's leading the
There's a great pub in Dunedin, which is the Kerry's Bay Hotel, where they have Hawtrey paintings on the walls in the pub.
Oh, how wonderful. Yeah. Yeah, of course, that's his hometown, isn't it? Home area. So that's the first one. And the next one is one about John Reynolds, questions for Mr. Reynolds, and particularly about his cloud painting series. Claremont on Claremont, one about Philip Claremont. And that film has been made by his son Orlando. And he actually was going to come over, but he's now gone travelling. So Orlando's mother, Rachel, is going to come over and be at that screening. The one after that is one about public sculpture. It's one that's been made by Owen Hughes. And it's really just looking at some public sculpture in New Zealand and how New Zealanders react to it and why we have so much of it. And I guess that'll be of interest here because of our sculpture on the Gulf and...
And often quite controversial, isn't it?
It is.
Public sculpture. There is a great movie, actually, which isn't on the program. Maybe you'd do this one out as well.
Yeah.
It was screened on TV. It's this great documentary about a woman who created this park in Wellington. It's a whole lot of tiles. And it just, the cost just escalated, and she became very difficult. And, and the documentary makers, of course, didn't know that was going to happen, but captured the whole thing, and it's quite a quite an insight.
Yeah. Sounds good. Yeah. And the last film of the series is about Alan Bollinger, who is not a painter, a visual artist. He's a cinematographer and probably the best-known one in New Zealand. And it's a film that Jared Smythe has made about him. So that's the series. And what we're doing before each of the feature films, we're showing films about Waiheke artists that have been made locally, except for one of them about Jan Nigro, who used to live here, that was actually made for television by Greenstone, but it features a lot of Waiheke Islanders. It's the setting down at Joe Smith's house, and Basil's in it, you know, and they're all in it.
Who are the other local artists who are featured in those short films?
Okay, the first one before the Hotori one on Tuesday will be Luke Tutagoro. He's a local painter. And Scott's made that film about him. And there's another one of Scott's films about a sculptor whose name escapes me because it's not written here. That's a bit naughty, but never mind. And also we have a small film of Mike Morgan. Yeah, so there's a few. We're hoping to get more films made of local artists, actually. That's another project some of the local filmmakers are working on. But at the moment, we'll show what we've got before these feature films.
So, I mean, most of these films are about the visual arts. Is there something you think, does film lend itself well to portraying those kind of ideas and the work of those artists?
Yeah, I think so. Well, film's a visual media, isn't it? Yeah, I think so. And it's also about what's available in this country. There aren't that many films. Not everybody's had a film made out of them. Mm. Not all the films are good films. So it's about what's available out there.
Now, in terms of the cinema, this idea of putting together a season of films like this, is something new you're trying out?
No, we did a few last year. We had one on Rita Angus and Edith Collier, and so it wasn't so put together. But we have always run films on artists because Waiheke is an island of artists. Yeah, it's we run the odd mini festival. We've got another one coming up in September with the local forest and bird, The Real Earth. So that'll be a week of films about the environmental issues. And, we do others from time to time.
Good stuff. Mm. So now can people pick up a season ticket, if you like, or something like that, or they just come along each week?
They're actually on our Tuesday documentary night, which is always the Koha night, so it's just a donation.
Great.
So,
great opportunity to see some of those films.
Yeah, it makes it more accessible to people.
And if they ever do get shown on TV, which they never ever do they? But if they do, they're always at like 11 o'clock on Sunday night.
Oh, yeah, on Artsville.
People have got tiny little TVs and...
Absolutely. Yeah. There's nothing like the big screen to really appreciate these films.
Yeah, good stuff. So as Lynn Stewart of Waiheke Community Cinema, and to find out more about that season of Art on Film, or films about art, phone 372 4240. Thanks very much, Lynn.
You've been listening to interviews from Island Life. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you by Island Designs every Saturday morning from 10 till 12. The interviews are replayed on Wednesdays at 7pm and Island Life can be downloaded as a podcast from our website www.waihikiradio.org.nz.